Welcome into the install with Greg Cosell, week three edition. Buck Rising, your host. Happy to be back. Greg, an incredibly exciting weekend of football in week two. I hope you got to enjoy it the way that most fans did.
I enjoy it on Sunday. You know, I just watch Red Zone for the most part, but, you know, grinding through the tape, you know, when there's so many good games, because as you know, Buck, it doesn't take me 10 minutes to go through a game. And I feel like I'm behind this week, you know, because there were so many games where I had to kind of really watch closely. And that's the way it is early in the year, too, when you're trying to see what teams do, because even teams with the same coaching staffs, they tweak things, they add things, they subtract things. So you kind of have to, you know, I have to see that stuff. You can't just roll along and say, okay, this is what happened, you know, and it takes time. So if I start falling asleep and drooling, you'll understand.
Well, listen, I can't imagine how you're awake at all at this point, but there's given that, you know, Greg, a lot of the chatter about this week of football just on the internet and from people watching the games was between the Titans and the Seahawks, which we'll obviously spend time on, the Chiefs and the Ravens, the way that they were able to steal that win at the end because Edwards-Helaire fumbled, and then Minnesota and Arizona. So from an excitement standpoint, fans ate that up. But so far from the games that you have been able to get through, what was the most interesting to break down from a tape standpoint?
Oh, that's I tell you, the team, it's funny you say that. And I don't know if it's going to be starting to talk about, you know, by people. They obviously play tomorrow night. But I think the Carolina Panthers are a very intriguing team. And I actually said this to a friend of mine who lives in Carolina, that this, and I said it before the game on Sunday. I didn't know what was going to happen.
Right.
But I just said, you know, this is a team that has some really good offensive concepts in the past game that really helps Sam Darnold. They've got really good skill players. Everybody thinks McCaffrey, but they've got three good wide receivers and DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, and the rookie Terrace Marshall from LSU, who obviously people in SEC country are familiar with.
Sure.
And LSU always puts out wide receivers. And you know what? Their defense is becoming very interesting to watch. And they've also got some pretty good players on defense. So they're doing some interesting things schematically with use of personnel. But they've also got players, particularly pass rushers, that can win in Burns and Hassan Reddick. And that always makes your defense better when you do feel that if you want to rush four, that you can at least impact the quarterback. Because coaches know teams don't get 10 sacks in a game, Buck. The right goal is to impact the quarterback. You know, if you get four sacks, you're feeling pretty good. But it's impacting the quarterback. It's speeding him up. It's making him play faster mentally, which makes him play faster physically. You know, so that's what you're really trying to do.
And it's funny that you bring up Carolina, because I was just, I don't know if you're familiar with Brandon Thorne, who does a lot of the offensive and defensive line breakdowns.
I know Brandon, sure.
He does a great job, and he had highlighted Daquan Jones in particular, who of course Titans fans know, who was getting some really good interior push on what's one of the better offensive lines in New Orleans, or at least one of the more talented offensive lines
in New Orleans. Yeah, no, I mean, they're an intriguing team, and because they're not, you know, and again, you're in a market where people don't necessarily think of the Titans as a big national team either, you know, and that's no knock on them, that because it's not their fault. It's the way people perceive it.
Sure.
Carolina falls into that same category. You know, no one wants to talk about Carolina because they're not seen as a, you know, a national team. But, you know, just watching their week one tape, and as I said, telling a friend before the week two game, I think they're going to be pretty good. Now, I don't do records. I don't do, you know, prognostication. I don't know what their record's going to be. You know, I did look at their schedule. They don't play Tampa for the first time until week 16. So they play Tampa week 16 and week 18. And I'm not suggesting by then they're going to be, you know, 13-2 or anything like that. But the point is they're a very intriguing team, intriguing early season team, given their talent level, their schematics, and, you know, they're interesting to watch on tape.
So what Greg is telling me is that I need to throw out our record prediction segment at the end of the show. So I'll save us all that trouble and keep it going. So let's look back quickly at the Titans, given that we are in Nashville and that this is the local professional football team. The defensive coverage bust, Greg, you and I were talking before the podcast. You know, I'll let you summarize it quickly because there's not much to be said about what happened there.
No. Let's just start this way. Let's just talk about the Titans coverage in general.
Yeah.
Through two games, they've been a predominant single high safety coverage defense. They predominantly play cover one. They also play snaps of cover three, significant snaps. So for people who don't know, cover one is the man-to-man version of single high safety. Mm-hmm. So it's some people call it man free. You've got the single high safety. He's a free player, and you're matching the five eligible receivers man-to-man. Cover three is the zone version of single high. So you've got a single high safety, and you're not matching the five eligibles purely man-to-man. You may at times, depending on where they go in zone, what side of the field, whether it's boundary or field, but it's essentially taught as a zone coverage. And in fact, they were playing also a lot of split safety against the Seahawks. They played more split safety than they did versus who they played?
Arizona.
Right. Than they did against Arizona week one. So this particular week, they played more split safety. So that's their foundational coverage approach. They've given up some big plays. Think back to week one. Kirk caught a touchdown where Molden was covering him in the slot. He ran by Molden on a go route. And that was the rainbow that Murray threw for a touchdown. Unfortunately, Molden got beat again this week on the deep over by Lockett. Mm-hmm. And then Lockett ran in for a touchdown. That was the 63 yarder, but they were playing a cover one. As I just explained, Molden was matched on Lockett. And he actually beat McDougal too, because Molden ran a phenomenal route. So they got beat on those plays. And in fact, after that second touchdown, Molden did not play on third down pretty much after that. Chris Jackson was the slot corner on third down. Molden played on first down, second down in the nickel, but he was not on the field on third down. The Swain touchdown was a bust. I looked at it over and over. I
don't know how a guy gets going that free, Greg.
All I can say is this. Maybe someone like Coach Mack can explain it better than I can. Fulton on the side of Swain played like a cover two corner, allowing Swain to run by him. But Byard played it almost like a robber sitting inside. So when they played it that way, there was no one to play the vertical route. So, again, maybe I'm wrong, but that was just a bust.
Yeah, clearly Kevin Byard spoke to us much after the game. He told us, we were miscommunicating on that particular play. Yeah. And that's where things went sideways. So
you
know, the explosive plays through 2 weeks, they're not ideal, but certainly a good way to kind of summarize them there. Those three plays, though, went for 182 total yards and two touchdowns. So but can't I mean, have that happen.
You could argue defensively, I thought they played better. First of all, they got some pressure this week.
Yes.
And I thought they did a really good job with that. They were pretty multiple with their front looks. Every team now, and they did it, is playing what we call a loaded front, Buck. And what that means is you have three defensive linemen to one side of the center, okay? And then you have the other DN in kind of a wide nine opposite on the other side. And you almost always stunt from the three-man side. They were really effective with Simmons and Autry stunting because they were the D tackles in their stub fronts. And it was almost always Autry the picker, meaning he goes first to pick, and then Simmons would always be the looper. He would loop behind. And they got some good pressure that way. So they actually had a good pass rush. They also played what we call a five-man diamond front, where they play five across. And what that does is it pretty much dictates one-on-one blocking for pass protection. And that was actually the sack that Adonijé had. Is that how you pronounce it, Adonijé?
Oh, Ole Adeniyi, yeah.
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 That he had in overtime. It came out of the five-man diamond front. And he had a stunt behind three slanting rushers. Again, another stunt. They did a lot of stunting. He stunted behind three slanting rushers, and he was clean to Wilson. So they did a nice job up front with multiple stunt concepts to try to create pressure on Wilson, and they had some success doing it.
Yeah, Vrabel and Bowen love those diamond fronts. That's something that they used a lot during their time together in Houston as well.
Oh, yeah, Houston started doing that years ago, and I'm sure Vrabel was there. And, you know, yeah, it's called a diamond front. Yeah, that's what they call it.
Yeah. So let's talk then about the offensive side of the football, Greg, because it was obviously a much better outing across the board. Tannehill, I thought, you know, despite the protection issues in week one, has been really, really stout trying to get them in and out of correct looks, checking at the line of scrimmage, even when he doesn't necessarily go with the play that's called. But Downing was able to scheme up a lot more explosive plays. Now, the execution, certainly on A.J. Brown's side of things, was not ideal. But what did you see first and foremost from the Titans on offense and how they were able to, you know, better set up those explosive plays from week one?
And I will say this, because a lot of people think they know. People who think they know what Tannehill's saying at the line of scrimmage, unless you're a coach and unless you're in the room, you don't know. You can guess. So, you know, he does a lot. He speaks a lot. It's like I have this conversation always about Dak Prescott. He does the same thing. He talks a lot, you know, before the snap. We don't know what he's saying.
Right.
So we don't know what Tannehill's saying. But obviously he's given a lot of freedom. And the only time coaches give quarterbacks that kind of freedom is if they're good at it.
Yeah.
So they wouldn't give him that freedom if he couldn't do it.
Right.
So, but yeah, I mean, the explosive plays, you know, sometimes they, I thought his best explosive play, and it was explosive, was the 51 yarder to Jones. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the reason why that was so fascinating to me is because what is one of their favorite pass concepts, Buck? It's that bang play action, and then they hit the slant, right? Or the quick in-breaker. You know, they've done it to Brown through the years. They've started to do it with Julio Jones. But I'm sure people who are Titans fans can picture it.
Yeah.
He's under center. It's quick play action. It's a three-step drop or a very quick five-step drop. The linebackers step up, and he just sticks that in-breaker right behind them. We've seen Brown last year score probably three or four touchdowns on that. You know the play. You can picture it, right?
Yeah, I've seen Corey Davis run it a million times.
Yeah, he's run it as he ran it as well.
Yeah.
So with that play in mind, think about the 51-yarder to Jones. They actually ran a very similar concept, okay? And it was after they had run their staple concept of quick bang play action, hitting the in-breaker. And the post safety Diggs, he read Tannehill's quick drop off the play action. I'm convinced of this. The film shows you that. He read Tannehill's quick drop off the play action, and he sat low on the in-breaker tendency by Brown, okay? Mm-hmm. And Brown actually kind of slipped out of his break. He might not have been open anyway because Diggs was certain that's where the ball was going.
Right.
Because, hey, he'd seen that all leading up to that week. I guarantee in the meeting rooms they told him that. And then he saw it in the game, and now he saw it again. And you know what? He probably thought in his mind, I'm coming up, and maybe I'll make a pick, but I'm certainly going to stop that play from happening.
Yeah.
So what happened there? Because it was zone, it was cover three. Jones ran the post route behind that. And it was against an outside leverage corner, Flowers, because it was cover three, and corners tend to play with outside leverage, meaning they're outside the receiver. And then Tannehill just did a great job of recognizing that Diggs sat low, and he threw over the top, and he threw a great ball, by the way. So that play to me, when I saw that play, I you know, just smiled a little bit, because I thought that was just outstanding recognition and execution by Tannehill.
Yeah, no, he was as good a game as I've seen from him in as hostile environment as there is in the NFL.
Oh yeah,
that's my first time.
How
out
about
to
the
Seattle,
screen
Greg.
Game to Derrick Henry? Two design screens. I wonder if we're going to see more of those, Buck.
Well, and certainly with Todd Downing in his 1 year as the play caller in Oakland, he loves to get the football to the running backs in the passing game. It's been a minute since we've seen a well-executed screen to Derrick Henry, Greg. So, and I was glad to see them pull it off and keep going back to it when they were having success.
Yeah, I mean, they threw two design screens to Henry. He had, I think, six catches, but I'm almost sure it was two design. Maybe I missed one.
No, that's correct.
I think you're going to see more of that as the season progresses, because you want to get Henry out in space. What they'll do is they'll start adding tweaks to that. They'll create some misdirection, because what you want to do with Henry, obviously, is get him out in front with blockers with fewer defenders. For people who watched the Packers game Monday night, they had some great misdirection screens to Robert Tonyan, the tight end. It doesn't matter who you throw it to, tight end, Henry, but you want space. You want Henry to catch the ball with space in front of him so that he can build up his speed and his power. So I think that's something you're going to see more of.
with their running game, Greg, because obviously Derek went crazy in the second half. We've talked about this before. The explosive runs are often more a result of defensive gap misses, basically, as opposed to exceptional blocking. Were you seeing that from Seattle, or were the Titans getting that kind of push up front?
Well, I'm going to tell you something that I think might be a surprise to people, but I think their run game was really not that good. Okay. I think it still needs to be much better. Okay. Because Henry had the 60-yard run. Okay. And that came on a zone counter strong concept. And he made the unblocked corner. Flowers missed in space, which he'll do. A lot of corners don't really want to tackle him. And then the speed, he ran away from the safety. But I thought that Henry ended up with big numbers as a result of that run. But I thought overall the Titans' base personnel run game still needs work. Now, don't forget the O-line's dealing with injuries, but I thought they struggled at the point of attack much of the game. Look, big runs count, okay? We know that. But all I'm saying is you take away that run, and it counts, and he averaged less than 4 yards to carry. And I did not feel that they consistently moved people and won at the point. I thought Henry ran really well and gained, as he always does, gaining yards after contact. But my guess is that the coaching staff, you know, when they got on the plane and when they got back, you know, while they're drinking their scotch, they're talking about the fact that we still need to be better in the run game.
Well, and I'm so glad that you brought that up, because that's something that I think gets so easily swept away in the numbers, right? Because of Derrick Henry's ability to break those plays, even if the design or even if the push up front isn't getting what they need to. So I'm glad that you broke that down.
Yeah, no, that's what I saw. I mean, again, and I believe I saw it correctly. I think that, you know, the coaches, hey, look, whatever they say publicly, you know, I don't hear all those comments. You do. So I don't know what's said. But I guarantee in their meetings, they're talking about, hey, our run game needs to be better. Now, what is Saffold's status? Do you know at this point?
He was on it literally just came out, the injury report. He is not currently listed on the injury. No, excuse me. He did not practice today with the shoulder. And that was where they pulled him out twice. He had to come out of the game twice for Aaron Brewer and could not finish. So at this point, he's uncertain.
How about Lawan?
Lawan was full go today.
Okay, then he's fine. Okay.
Yeah.
But I mean, obviously they played the whole second half without Saffold and Lawan, the whole game without Lawan, but the whole second half without Saffold. So, you know, but the reality in this league is you got to line up and play with who's available. And this is what their offense is. It starts with Derrick Henry. So they're not going to change that. It's not like all of a sudden Henry's going to get 6 carries this week. So if they want to be a running team, the execution of the run game needs to be more consistent.
Well, and that's a great transition into a defensive front that's pretty stout in Indianapolis for all the struggles that they have had through this 0-2 start. Greg, we've talked about the Indy defense before. The Rams game, I went back and watched it on Game Pass, and of course only the television copy is available to us. But I really thought that Indy played much better than week one defensively. I was wondering what your observations were with the problems that they were able to cause for the Rams, and then ultimately Los Angeles coming out victorious in that one.
Obviously, they did a very good job versus the run, and obviously that's going to be what they're facing this week.
Right.
You know, for people who remember, Henry had a big game against the Colts last year, the second game, which the Titans won pretty big. But in that game, Buckner did not play. And Autry, who's now obviously a Titan, he did not play either. So you almost have to throw that game out.
Yeah.
I would say that, you know, the Colts are playing more snaps of single high safety coverage this year than they did a year ago, which my guess is you will see, because they will want that body, that extra body on the line of scrimmage, in the box, on the ball, to defend the run game of the Titans, which is predominantly out of base personnel, 2 tight ends, 3 tight ends, the fullback blasting game. The reality is, just as a year ago, through 2 weeks, Henry has far and away the most first down rushes of any back in the league, relatively speaking. And the large majority of those first down rushes come out of some form of base personnel. So that's what you have to defend. Now, they've struggled a bit in the secondary, too. I don't know what Xavier Rhodes' status is. He obviously missed the first 2 games. They've been playing Carey at right corner and Rakyasin at left corner. Moore is a terrific slot corner, one of the best in the league. I think there are two nickel linebackers, Leonard and Okereke. We know Leonard's a top three backer in the league. Okereke is extremely athletic, working toward being a really complete athletic linebacker. So they have players. The problem is their secondary.
Yeah, and
the
Xavier
corner
Rhodes
position in particular.
Xavier Rhodes did not practice today dealing with a calf injury, and yeah, nor did Carson Wentz. So.
Well, yeah, we don't. Did he? He didn't practice today, did he?
No, he did his media availability without the boot on, but he was on a scooter wheeling around the facility yesterday.
Yeah, so I mean, it's almost impossible to talk about their offense as we're speaking today, Buck, because you know I think Wentz has played reasonably well through two games, but you know you put a young rookie quarter, a second year quarterback out there in Jacob Eason, who I've been around and yeah, I know the kid a little bit, but that's a tall task.
Yeah, certainly. And I think, you know, and necessarily the conversation that we had today with some people in Indianapolis on the radio show was they don't necessarily know that it's Jacob Eason for sure with Brent Hundley sitting on the practice squad. But I imagine that decision would have to be made sooner rather than later.
If it's not Wentz, that decision may not be made till Saturday. You know, I mean, they'll know what it is, but they probably won't say anything.
Yeah, certainly. So I do want to look at a little bit of what happened to Indy on two particular series, Greg. The opening drive for them in the red zone that stalled out with the decision to go run action on fourth and one because they were moving the ball relatively at ease.
Yeah, but they couldn't run it in tight. And that always kills you when you can't run it tight in the inside, let's say, the 3-yard line. That kills you.
And they went three straight dives on that. Yeah. On those first three.
Yeah, and that absolutely kills you.
Yeah. So from that standpoint, what Quentin Nelson and Aaron Donald, it's rare that a guard and a defensive tackle are the biggest matchup from a game, but how did you see Indy kind of trying to handle Aaron Donald up front? Because I imagine that will be a primary focus with Jeffrey Simmons and Denico Autry on the Titans' defensive side of the ball.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Let's I'd rather talk actually – because I'm glad you mentioned the name, because I had him on a sheet here that I wanted to talk about. I'd actually rather talk about Jeffrey Simmons, if that's okay, because I thought he played really well this week.
Of course.
And again, I'm not charting every play, you know, as coaches do. I can't do that or, you know, I have a lot of games to get through. But I thought Simmons played really, really well this week, both in the run game and then in his use as a rusher where they did a lot of those stunts and he was the looper. So, he's got such strong hands. His in the run game, his ability to control and displace offensive linemen to me is really good. Now, he's going to have some snaps against Nelson. I can't say what's going to happen, Buck. You know, that's impossible to say. But I think that's a really good matchup because you're dealing with two guys that are really strong. And it's just going to be one of those. You know, for our friend Brandon Thorne, it's going to be a really fun one to watch. But I'm just really glad you mentioned Simmons because, I think he needs to be talked about. I thought he played really, really well.
Well, that's music to Titans fans' ears, Greg, because they've been waiting for him to kind of reach this potential. We've seen all of the flashes, and it's now good to see it kind of materialize with some help around him.
And I think people do need to keep in mind, Buck, he may not be a 17-sack guy. He's a deep tackle.
Right.
But, you know, if he gets 9 sacks, that's probably a good year, you know. But it just in terms – the thing I learned years ago when I started watching college tape, you know, to evaluate college players is sometimes I'd look at stats before I'd watch a game and I'd see a deep tackle had 1 tackle. And I'd go, oh, my God, he probably didn't play well. Then I'd put the tape on and watch all 75 plays and I'd go, oh, my God, he dominated the game.
Right.
You know, because sometimes stats for an interior lineman are totally misleading.
Yeah. No, it's good context to keep in mind. Well, the Rams have an incredible opponent this weekend. Tom Brady, who appears to be continually timeless, he's leading the league in touchdown passes. Again, it's him and Gronkowski out there doing it like it's 2012. I hate that it's not a primetime game because I'm scared. I don't want to miss it in real time. But the Rams and the Bucks, I know there's going to be a pretty dedicated portion of the matchup show this weekend to it. What are you most excited to see and break down from this game? How do you think these two teams will go at each other?
Yeah, this is going to be a fascinating game because if you let's look at it, we know the Bucks are really good on offense. I mean, I don't think we need to spend, I'm being honest, I don't think we need to spend a lot of time talking about the fact that Tom Brady's good and that their offense is good.
Summed up.
You know, that's the Rams' defense is more zone heavy than man heavy, so they'll have a lot of their zone beater concepts in. But let's talk about the Rams. The Rams, obviously, when you play the Bucks, you probably feel that you have to put up points. You know, so I don't think with Stafford and their receivers and the mindset of McVay, I doubt he's going to be thinking about slowing the game down to limit Tom Brady's possessions. I think with Stafford, with the receivers, the tight end's good, Higbee's good, I think he's going to be thinking about scoring 30-plus.
Yeah.
So last week, we saw that DeSean Jackson only played three snaps. McVay even said, hey, I got to do a better job getting him out here. I think he'll play this week. When I say play, he's not going to play 60 snaps. But I think there'll be schemed deep shots in this game. There'll be intermediate and vertical route combinations. The secondary for the Bucks can be beaten. They still are missing, you know, one of their best secondary players in Murphy Bunting. There were reports that they were interested in Richard Sherman. So clearly they think their secondary is not what it needs to be. So I think that's where you have to attack. The question is protection. Now, the one thing about Stafford, which is different than their previous quarterback, Goff, is Stafford has the ability to make second reaction movement throws and make those throws down the field, not checkdowns.
Yeah.
So that's an element that the Bucs clearly have to be aware of. But just talking philosophical football, I can't imagine for one second that Sean McVay is going to think in terms of slowing the game down, let's control the tempo and try to win 20-17. I'd be really shocked if that thought even entered his mind.
Which is great news. More points, more touchdowns. Let's see it. How big of an asset is Cooper Kupp? I love the creativity that they involve him with.
Yeah, and look, the touchdown, he scored the first one, he was in the backfield.
Right.
As we know. The second one was beautiful as well. And actually, I'm breaking down the second one in the matchup show. But the first one, he was offset in the backfield to the boundary. They basically ran a concept that everybody runs, but four verticals. And it's just that he was in the backfield and he ran the inside seam. They anticipated single high safety coverage. Four verticals is a great route concept against single high because the free safety, the post safety can't play both verticals.
Right.
So it's really a good concept. So, you know, I think the other thing, if they feel they can protect, and that's critical, it's a tough D line, you're going to see empty sets. They've been phenomenal out of empty sets through the first 2 weeks. Stafford threw two games out of empty sets is 15 for 19 for 216 yards and two touchdowns. So they have been super efficient and explosive out of empty sets.
It's been so much fun to watch Matt Stafford in that offense and see the ways that McVay is getting him involved and how much better it can make a Sean McVay offense to have a quarterback who can do the things that Jared Goff just at this point in his career hasn't been capable of doing.
Stafford's always been a really high-level talent. You know, he's a classic case of people, you know, fans, I'm not talking about Detroit fans, but just fans in general, have no idea how great Stafford is just because he hasn't won a playoff game. But people in the league and in the know that Stafford is a high, high-level talent who's also very intelligent.
Well, Greg, it's been another great episode of The Install. I'm excited for week three. What can people expect to see from you guys on the matchup show this week and before we get out of here?
Well, we talked about the Bucks and the Rams, obviously. Mm-hmm. And that's a game that is, you know, a major focus for us. We're doing a full segment on that. Monday night's Eagles-Cowboys. It's always a big NFC East game. Chargers-Chiefs, very big game. Obviously, the Chiefs coming off a loss. I did not think Mahomes, despite the numbers, played one of his better games. My guess is he would agree. But you have to keep in mind, when you play the Ravens offense, their offense is unique to the rest of the league. So what you do against them is not what you do against other teams. So that's a really big game. Packers-Niners, I believe, is the Sunday nighter. And that's a really intriguing game, too.
Right.
The Packers, the way in which they played Monday night, where they played against a Lions team that played so much with two high safeties, and the Packers were patient. They ran the football. The Raiders are, we're going to kind of take a look at too. Matt Bowen will, because they've won two games. Carr's played really well. They've kind of mixed efficiency on offense with explosiveness on offense, and that's what you ideally like to do.
Yeah, I think Derek Carr's looks so much better with downfield targets that he trusts with Henry Ruggs. It's been interesting to watch that kind of develop throughout the course of the last 2 weeks. Greg, appreciate the time as always. We'll look forward to doing it again next week. And to the audience, make sure that you go DVR the Matchup Show. Get the greatest breakdown in all of the NFL with Greg, Sal Pal, Matt Bowen as well. And then make Greg happy. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We always appreciate it. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Buck. Appreciate it.